following program is brought to you in living color.
They're hollowing. They're howling like mad. They're baying at the sun. That's always a good sign. We're up 4 degrees from last hour. Yeah, how about that? 59 degrees heading for the low 60s today. Maybe to somebody in California, that sounds like the sounds like what the Eskimos might like.
But right.
It's pretty warm for us right here. Folks, here we go. It's 102, hour number two, the Thursday edition of the Wolf Brewing Company All Request and Dedication Program, live and in autumnal colors right here on Club 1220 KLBB. Well, folks, we have had a lot of interesting visits, conversations on this program, chats with people you often hear on this show through their music. They are outstanding pop and rock artists who started their musical careers as young people way back when, and many of whom are still out there sharing their musical talents with us. Let's see. Bobby, it's quite a list indeed here of people we've chatted with on this program.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Let me just tick off a few here. Johnny Crawford.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ronnie Spector.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Sedaka visited with us. Jack Jones. Mike Love of the Beach Boys.
Oh, yeah.
What was it, about springtime? Bobby Rydell spent an hour or so with us on the show. Not so long ago, Freddie Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dean Torrance gave us an hour of his time. Peter Yarrow, Peter, Paul, and Mary. We played them just a bit ago. And on my Saturday show, we talked with Brenda Lee and Bobby V, and the list goes on. Huh?
Don't forget about Carol Kay.
There's no way I could forget about Carol Kay, the great electric bass player, part of, 10,000 recording sessions.
Yes.
Huh? And now, ladies and gentlemen, right now, we add yet another musical luminary to our list. Let's give you a little hint.
Sweet little Sheila, you'll know her if you see her. Blue eyes and a ponytail.
No mystery at all. You know who that is, and he's with us at this very moment from California to talk about his life, his career, his music, all encapsulated in his new autobiography. Ladies and gentlemen, yes, the real thing, Mr. Tommy Rowe. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, Stan, what an introduction, man.
Wow, you don't want me to take it back, do you, huh?
Not at all. I love it.
Oh, that's
I
what,
love it. That's
Tommy, great. Tommy, thank you so much for carving out some time for us today. Tommy Rowe, I'm wondering, Tommy, should I call you Tommy Caviar? Would that be better?
You've read some of the book.
I've read all of the book. We're talking about...
Oh, cool.
Oh, man. Tommy Rowe. You know, before we plunge into Tommy's life and his music, Tommy Rowe, I think it was it a record label official who said, Rowe, well, you know...
Right.
Row in small letters, R-O-E. That's fish eggs. Maybe we need something
that's
that,
right.
A little tonier in sound. Maybe Caviar. Tommy Caviar. Was he serious about changing your name to Tommy Caviar?
It's hard to believe, but it actually happened. I was in the office. I came up right after Sheila was a hit, right before we released Sheila, and they were seriously considering changing my name, and I was resistant all the way.
Good for you.
And then they gave me some ideas, and one of them was Tommy Caviar. Well, I didn't even know what caviar was, you know, when I was 21 years old.
Yeah.
And they actually suggested that for me, and thank goodness we turned it down.
Absolutely. Tommy, can't you hear Ed Sullivan introducing you right here on our stage, Tommy Caviar?
Oh, my goodness.
Just
ABC Paramount, I tell you, that's something.
Oh, man.
Well, that's kind of what I write about in the book, you know.
Yep.
I write a lot about the executives during that period of time because,
you do.
Honest to goodness, they really didn't have a clue about music. they were guys, they were businessmen,
right.
And all they really cared about was the bottom line.
Yeah.
And some of the things they came up with, it's like when you had a hit, you know.
Yeah.
they insisted on the follow-up to sound exactly like the hit, and you had no choice about it. You had to go into the studio and record that song,
This is a...
So it was pretty bizarre.
It really is, and this really gave me an insight. I've studied pop music, I hope, fairly deeply. This is the best insight yet in your book. It's called From Cabbage Town to Tinsel Town and Places in Between by Tommy Rowe. It's a great read, and Tommy, I've read the whole thing. It really is it's a good trip. And yes, I didn't realize the extent to which these record geniuses, the front office brains, controlled things to the extent they did. It's just amazing. It's kind of like, it's kind of like, isn't it, military generals who have never been in combat? They don't have a clue, do they?
That's right. That's right. Well, it's just the way it was. Yeah. I mean, there was nothing, a 21-year-old kid, what am I going to do? I get a hit record, and I do what they tell me to do.
That's right. Your kid from Cabbage Town, that's a neighborhood, still is, was a neighborhood. You were born 1942 in Atlanta, Georgia. So Cabbage Town is the name of a working-class neighborhood?
Yeah, Today, Cabbage Town is like a very desirable place to live. Uh-huh. In fact, they turned the old Fulton Bag cotton mill into loft condos, and it's beautiful down there.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, it was a working class neighborhood, mm-hmm. and people that lived in the area worked in the mill there, And the way it got its name, Cabbage Town, is mostly, people from the Appalachian and European ancestry. And their staple, one of their staples was cabbage. So anytime you would walk through the neighborhood in the afternoon, you'd have to catch the scent of cabbage coming from all the kitchens or in the neighborhood. And so they called it Cabbage Town. There's also a Cabbage Town in Toronto, which I didn't realize until I started writing this book.
Yeah, I've been there.
And you're right. Same kind of deal.
Yeah, it is.
So that was my beginning. That was my early roots. And then when I turned about 7 years old, 6 or 7 years old, we moved to the west end of Atlanta, which was a little step up, but not a whole lot.
Okay, well, Tommy, it's nice. And to my ears and to Bobby's ears here too, we can hear that Atlanta. Little bit of that Atlanta still in your voice there. It's very nice. We don't hear it in your singing. And when we talk to Bobby Rydell, you never hear the South Philly accent when he's singing.
You're right.
But when he's talking on the phone, it comes through. Tommy, before we plunge into your book and your life story, all the music, all the great music you've brought us, I just wanted you to know that yesterday I went up to a small central Minnesota town to say goodbye to a friend of ours, you and me, and millions of others. That would be Bobby V. was laid to rest yesterday. And Bobby passed away, I know you know this, a week ago Monday of complications from Alzheimer's disease. I had the joy of knowing Bobby as a personal friend for about 30 years, and I know you went way back with Bobby and considered him a very special friend, didn't you?
Right, and I would have been up there yesterday if I was flying from Atlanta back to Los Angeles, so I didn't get to go to the funeral. But, of course, Bobby and I did so many tours together in the U.S., and in England we toured together so many times, probably a dozen different times in England. And he was just a genuine super guy. He would share the stage with you, and he was very generous with that. He would allow you to do your thing. And, present you in a very professional way. He was just a real pro. And, of course, we're all going to miss him terribly. And he has a wonderful family. His kids were played in the band. Jeff played drums.
Yep.
Tommy on bass.
Yep.
We traveled all over the globe together with these guys. It was like family.
They really are. I was with them all yesterday, and we are like family. You're so right. Bobby V and his family, too. Not a touch of ego in those people. They're so well grounded, aren't they, Tommy? They're just terrific. So
I think being a Southerner, that's kind of why I fell in love with these guys. I mean, they're like Southerners. I mean, Southerners have this open arms kind of attitude about everything.
Right.
And Bobby's family is the same way. They're so giving and wonderful people,
And Tommy Rowe, one of the songs you wrote and performed, I think it was in the middle 80s, you mentioned Bobby V in the song called Who I Used to Be. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I started doing a lot of tours with Bobby in the early 80s. You know, the 70s was kind of a downer for all of us because of the disco thing. There wasn't a whole lot of work, and we kind of drifted through the 70s doing different things. And then early, say 79 or 80, we started getting a lot of calls to do nostalgia tours and oldies concerts. And I started doing those with Bobby, and, man, we worked constantly during the 80s together. And so when I wrote this song, it was kind of it's my Rick Nelson's, like the Rick Nelson Garden Party song, you know.
Tommy, we've got it queued up here. Would it be okay if we play it?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Who I used to be.
Let's hear it is. Tommy Rowe, and right now in the context of what's happened in the last couple of weeks, a tribute, really, to Bobby V, that recorded back in 1980s. Tommy, that's just wonderful. It's so heartfelt, too. It's just great. Of all people you picked to do a name check, is Bobby V. That's wonderful.
Well, it came from the heart. I mean, we started working together, and the song just happened, you know. Yeah. And R. Kriegel, you know, was his guitar. I don't know if you probably know R.
Yep.
Played guitar with Bobby for years.
Sure.
So they just, we were on the road and the song just kind of poured out. It just happened.
I'm so glad it did. Man, Tommy Rowe, you are good. That is just a great song, as all your hits. And even the ones that didn't chart high, they're all excellent. I wanted to read just a quote that was included in Bobby V's funeral bulletin or program yesterday. This is a quote from Bobby. If when your life is over, you can smile at where you've been, you've accomplished all that matters in the end. Isn't that
mm-hmm.
it?
Hmm? Mm-hmm.
That says
well,
it.
Well, that's it. That's perfect, yeah.
And I want you to know, just briefly, then we'll move off and on to other things, your book, that Brian Setzer was in the standing room only gathering yesterday in the church, and he played Sleepwalk on guitar.
Uh-huh.
And that was one of Bobby's favorite. Yeah, yeah. Brian came up especially for that. And Brian Hyland was also there playing a Dylan song, Every Grain of Sand, which was another of Bobby V's favorites. I was kind of hoping Bob Dylan himself would have shown up. Maybe he was there in disguise, Tommy. Who knows, huh?
Yeah, you never know about Bob.
Kind of a stealthy guy.
You might, You wouldn't recognize him, really.
That's true. One anecdote about Bobby V, and then we'll kind of back into your where you grew up and how you evolved into the musical star you are. And this is just a hoot. I love this story. One of the many great anecdotes from your new autobiography, From Cabbage Town to Tinseltown and Places in Between. One of those places in between, Tommy Rowe, was apparently someplace in Michigan, and your promoter played a joke on you. You were part of a package tour, apparently, with Bobby V, and I think Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels and some other guys.
That's right.
And he took you to a location. He didn't tell any of you where you were going. I think it was summertime. And so you go into this place, and Tommy Rowe, tell us what confronted you and the others.
Well, you know, to us, it was Bobby and myself and Brian Heil and Mitch Ryder and Gary Lewis and the Playboys. We were all, it was just another booking. We figured it was just another outdoor festival we were doing, you know. And so we all get into the van and head to the venue, and we go into this gate. They have a gate there with a guard. That was kind of unusual. so we go through the gate. The guy lets us in, and we start driving down this road. And all of a sudden, we started to see naked people out the woods. And at first, we just said, get it, you know. But once we got to the stage and we saw the stagehands, they were all in there, you know,
all together,
as well.
Uh-huh.
And so we figured, well, Dave has booked us in a nudist camp.
And he had.
And he did, and we did our concert just like the pros we all are. But I'm telling you, it was an experience like we had never had before. And it was especially when we started signing autographs after the show, because you didn't know where to look.
Where did you look, Tommy?
Well, I would make eye contact, and then when I had to sign, I'd go right to my paper and sign, and then I'd make eye contact.
Always the Southern gentleman.
Like I say in the book, when you see a lot of naked people in one group, it's easy to understand why clothes were invented.
I love that line. That is a beaut. Oh, man. And I'm guessing you have not been back to a nudist camp since, have you, huh?
That's the one and only. But I met Dave through Bobby. You know, okay. Dave was an agent out of Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And he was just a real practical joker anyway. Great agent. I mean, he kept us working constantly. But he loved to pull little jokes on us like that. And of course, he wasn't going to tell us it was a nudist camp.
Yeah.
Because he figured one of us might back out and he'd lose his big commission.
So, all about the money, huh? Yeah. Well,
yeah, all about the dough, yeah.
Tommy, that's...
So that was a great experience, one-of-a-kind experience for sure.
And that's one anecdote Bobby V never told me, on or off the air. I don't know if he knew what to make of it. Anyway, that's great. Tommy Rowe on the radio with us live right now from, I think you're in L.A., aren't you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles,
correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Tommy's career. He tells a beautiful, vivid story of his career from Cabbage Town to Tinseltown and places in between. We're going to take a break, Tommy. Come back in just a minute. Please, everybody, stay with us.
Sounds good. Yeah.
You
okay,
all know his name is Bobby V.
Consider a move. Visit Scandia Shores of Shoreview, the area's most exceptional independent living facility for seniors. Listen as residents tell why it feels so comfortable to them.
The people and the brightness and the food and the activities, everything, I guess. I think it's a great place.
Well, I like the staff because the staff are willing to do things that are not on their job description.
You don't really need a car, but you can have one. They take you just about every place you would like to go, from shows to luncheons, doctors.
It's also beautiful if you look not only inside, but the surroundings outside. They're very lovely.
Call Debbie and set up a tour and see why everyone loves living at Scandia Shores of Shoreview. 651-415-9793. She'll even treat you to a free lunch. 651-415-9793.
Life was simpler back in the day. The pace was slower, and the food more genuine somehow. It's still that way at Wayback Burgers. We use only fresh, authentic ingredients. Our delicious, juicy burgers are made to order and cooked to perfection. And our thick, creamy milkshakes are hand-dipped with real ice cream, the old-fashioned way. With Wayback's relaxing atmosphere and great food, things are as they were, only better. Taste freshness, America. Wayback Burgers.
And before we go any further, we want to make sure we let you know and remind you that the Temptations are coming to the Mystic Showroom in Prior Lake Saturday, December 31st at 3 p.m. That's a New Year's Eve performance, and tickets are still available. You can purchase them online at mysticlake.com. That's their website, mysticlake.com. Or you can call the Mystic Lake box office. Those ticket prices are $39 and $49. Again, this is for the Temptations. Make sure you give them a call. It's bound to be a great performance. The Temptations have been around for more than 50 years. They've been a driving force in popular music with a series of smash hits and sold-out performances worldwide. So again, it's the Temptations playing at the Mystic Showroom Saturday, December 31st. Tickets are available at the Mystic box office or online at mysticlake.com.
You are listening to the All Request Show with Stan Turner.
We got the old tunes, the new tunes, the show tunes, the blue tunes, the greatest music in town, but we never play it.
Weekdays, noon to 2 on KLBB.
The wait is over. Stan's back, and he's taking your requests and dedications. It's the Wolf Brewing Company All Request and Dedication Show on Club 1220. KLBB.
That was George Carlin doing that shtick, huh? The top 40 yeah. radio stuff. Isn't that funny? Wow. Well, folks, huh? How about these titles? You know them. Sheila, Everybody, Sweet Pea, Hooray for Hazel, Dizzy, Jam Up Jelly Tight. Oh, wow. Tommy Rowe, the singer, and in most cases, if not all cases, the writer of those songs. And aren't we lucky? We've got Tommy Rowe on the line from Los Angeles right now, talking about his new autobiography. Oh, the great anecdotes, the stories. We've already told you some of them. They're all real, even though they sound something. They sound too weird to be true. It's called From Cabbage Town to Tinsel Town and Places in Between. Tommy Rowe, thanks for being with us, my friend. And where can we get the book? How do we get your book?
Well, autographed copies from my website, TommyRowe.com, mm-hmm. and then you can order it on Amazon, and I think Barnes & Noble website. I think they have it on all the Internet websites. Mm-hmm. Can't autograph those, though. But so if you want an autographed copy, just go to TommyRowe.com.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. wonderful. And, folks, I've got an advanced copy here. Tommy, thanks for getting it to me. It's a great read. You know what? These autobiographies, especially of that time from the 50s and 60s on, they're great social histories, aren't they? They're really stories about our pop culture, and they tell us more, yeah. right?
Yeah, well, that's what I tried to do in this book. You know, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll has been written about yeah. so many times,
yeah.
and that's always behind the scene in all of our careers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just the way it was.
Yeah.
But I tried to parallel the music of the 60s with the culture of the time and the politics of the time
yeah.
and the things that were going on with the music and how influential the music of the 60s was on our culture and on our politics.
It truly was.
So,
so
that was my objective. I tried to take it to a little different level, you know, a little higher level, and not just talk about all the trashy stuff we did, you know.
No, it's a great read, and you have succeeded in accomplishing what you set out to do. Boy, it's a long way from a kid, you, in Atlanta, soldering wires at General Electric.
Yeah.
To taking a little, I can't call it a romance, but kind of a schoolyard friendship with a young lady, a little girl your age, named Frida. And suddenly
right.
you find that you are drawn to writing poetry, probably not Shakespearean, but you know, poetry. And you kind of
certainly
write
not Shakespeare.
And somehow that poem morphs into a song, which becomes your first hit. And what a hit. It went to number one in 1962, but not as Frida, because, as you point out, Frida probably wouldn't sell too well to, you know, remember, it wasn't that many years before that World War II had ended, and a lot of American GIs had served against the Nazis fighting them in Germany. So Frida, somebody prevailed upon you to change the name, huh?
Yeah, well, that's what Jed Phillips said when he when we told him the reason we told him we changed the name from Frida to Sheila, and he said, "Well, it's a good thing you did because I would have done it. We're too close to the Second World War. No Fräulein Frida going to sell in America." You know?
That's right. You have to remember it's 1962, not that many years, from the end of World War II. So Frida became Sheila, and we're going to play the song here because we'll sample your big hits here along the way. I don't know if we can have time to play them all the way through, but before we do Sheila here, Tommy. There are reports around. Do you have an aunt named Sheila?
Well, that's what I use in the show. I do not have an aunt named Sheila, but I like to use it. It sounds good anyway.
So. Okay, that's where it comes from. Okay. Just wanted to.
Yeah.
Anyway, Frida becomes Sheila becomes a number one hit for Tommy Rowe.
Sweet little Sheila, you'll know her if you see her. Blue eyes and a ponytail. Cheeks are rosy, she looks a little nosy. Man, this little girl is fine. Never knew a girl like a little Sheila. Her name drives me insane. Sweet little girl, that's my little Sheila. Man, this little girl is fine. Me and Sheila go for a ride. Ow, I feel funny inside. Then little Sheila whispers in my ear. Ow, I love you, Sheila dear. Sheila said she loved me. She said she'd never leave me. True love will never die. We're so doggone happy just being around together, man. This little girl is.
How about that for coming out of the chute? A number one hit on the first really major song he puts out. Tommy Rowe scores number one in 1962 with a song, his own composition, Sheila. And boy, do I hear echoes of Buddy Holly and the Lubbock, Texas sound in that one. Huh, Tommy? Huh?
No. Well, I was a huge Buddy Holly fan, so I used to sing all of his songs in my high school band, so it was just it's the way I sang. But we exaggerated the whole thing in the session. Selton Jarvis was my producer, and he really wanted me to make the Buddy Holly thing come out in the song. I recorded Sheila earlier in high school, and it didn't have the drums in it. It just had 2-4 drums. And Felton's idea was to do a whole take on Buddy, on his sound and everything, which I was kind of resentful of that in the beginning.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is Sheila was turned out to be the B side of the record. Save Your Kisses was the A side, and they played it, didn't go anywhere. And Buddy Dean in Baltimore flipped the record over and started playing Sheila, and it was just an immediate hit. It was just like it was meant to be, So. You just never knew back then. And in those days, DJs could kind of do what they wanted to do. They would flip records over and they'd play different cuts off of albums by artists. And it's a little different today. They don't have that ability to kind of choose and pick their own songs.
Yeah, they don't get the payola either, Tommy, do they, huh?
Well,
they used to take a little money under the table for playing some of the songs way back when.
Yeah.
But Sheila, that happened with so many songs that became hits. They were the B side, not the promotable side, so called. The record label geniuses again were so sure they picked the A side correctly, and in the case of Sheila, not so. So you're on ABC Paramount Records by the time you do Sheila in 1962. That was a big label, right? Yep.
Oh, that was the big label. Yeah, yeah. Ray Charles was on there. Fats Domino. They had all the big stars on ABC Paramount.
Yeah.
A lot of big acts.
Yeah, and some people, Bobby, remember the time I was talking to Bobby J, my producer, my friend here, my on-air buddy. We play a lot of your songs, Tommy, and one time we were talking about what people say about, Tommy Rowe, he's the king of bubblegum.
Mm-hmm.
He does all those bubblegum songs. And boy, did we get calls. I wasn't saying it. I was just reading quotes from people saying, this stuff is not true. This guy writes very sophisticated songs, and they're not just for prepubescent kids, preteens. They're good. Adults buy these things.
Oh, yeah.
Too, Sweet Pea, Hooray for Hazel, Sheila, Dizzy, all of that stuff. And then one guy called up who's in a local band here. Bobby, he was driving along. He pulled over and he said, "Man, can you guys dig out Everybody Right Now by Tommy Rowe? Do you want to hear a real rock and roll song?" And we knew the song. We put it on the turntable, and boy, it proved the point. Here we go.
Everybody, 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 hey!
tell you. I'll tell you what. Rock and roll does not get any better than that.
Good stuff.
Number three.
Well, you know, Stan, when I, you know, Stan, when I first started, when I left Judd, when I signed to Judd Records in the before ABC, I was considered a rockabilly singer, you know, rockabilly artist.
Sure.
And so Sheila was considered rockabilly, and then if everybody especially was considered rockabilly. And then the transition into the bubblegum thing came when I was in the service in 1964. I was doing my basic training, and the British invasion happened in the States and started pushing the American acts off the Billboard charts. And I was thinking, I was in a foxhole in the in Fort Sam Houston, Texas, thinking, what the heck am I going to do when I get out of here with all this competition, you know? Yeah. So I consciously came up with this idea to do what I called at the time soft rock. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I cut Sweet Pea, when I got out of the service and I went to Los Angeles. And we recorded Sweet Pea with the idea of competing with the British influx of acts, because they were just eating up the charts, you know? And they pushed a lot of the American acts off the charts.
Boy,
that was my... That was my conscious decision to try and sustain my career when I got out of the service, and it worked.
It
I mean,
did.
I was, I had the sound to myself, you know, with Sweet Pea, and I just kept following it up with soft songs after that, and it carried me through the decade.
Boy, that was a savvy move on your part, and we're gonna play a bit of Sweet Pea here. Number six on the charts, folks, from 1966, and you had a great producer on this one, Gary Paxton. I think he was part of the skip and flip thing, right? And
that's
He was involved in Alley Oop. He was the Hollywood Argyles, wasn't he?
He was Alley Oop. We lost Gary here as well. You know, Gary passed away this year.
A lot of them have. And we want to play a touch here of Sweet Pea. What a great career move, actually. This is a counter move against the British invasion. Tommy Rowe, his own composition here again, Sweet Pea. Another winner for Tommy Rowe, one he wrote, produced with Gary Paxton, 1966, number six on the charts. And Tommy, as with so many of your other hits, this one was a worldwide smash, too. You were selling Sweet Pea all over the place. Let's see, New Zealand, Canada, number one, Australia, number two. A global sensation. You did it again.
Right. And it was big in England. Manfred Mann recorded an instrumental version of it in England, and it was very big over there as well.
Yeah. The Brits love you guys. I know Bobby V had a lot of... In fact, you and he used to tour over there with some others, too. What was the attraction for them? Were they so tired of their own homegrown groups like the Beatles and the Stones that it was a breath of fresh air? It was something new for their ears to hear these fabled American top 40 rockers
over? You know, the Brits have always loved the American pop culture.
Yeah,
and when I went over the first time in 1963, that's when I met the Beatles, and nobody knew who the Beatles were in 1963. Mm-hmm. So they had their own music scene going there, but it was just in England. It wasn't spreading around the world. And I remember when I was touring with the Beatles, Brian Epstein used to talk about all the time, you know, we got to do something to get our guys in America, you know. And they were struggling to try to get worldwide attention. Mm-hmm. But they were actually just mimicking American music, I mean, they covered a lot of the American songs. And, you know, it's interesting. The Beatles were really, when I think about it, when I reflect on it, they were really the creators of bubblegum music, because if you think about their early songs, Love Me Do, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and you look at pictures of their audience was my audience. Right. It was the same audience.
Mm-hmm.
But because they were British, you know, they were you know, accepted in a different way. So,
yeah.
But their early songs were very pop-oriented and fit right in with what was going on in America at the time. And then when you saw them on the Ed Sullivan Show, that did it. If you just heard their music without seeing them, it didn't register with you.
Ah.
But when you saw them with the music, that's what made the Beatles work. So
they were a visual as well as an audio. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You think about it. Their songs, Love Me Do, all those early songs, compared to what was being recorded in America, were really not that great. They weren't great recordings. Mm-hmm. They were kind of basic, simple recordings.
Right.
Good songs, but if you just heard the record on the radio, it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But when they did the Ed Sullivan Show, that's what made it.
That did it. The old TV. Tommy Rowe with us live from California right now, talking about his new book. You got to read it. It's a great read. The From Cabbage Town to Tinsel Town and Places in Between. And what places, too. What a story by Tommy Rowe. And what a career. And he's still going, folks. Tommy, if you can hang on, we're going to take a break. Come back in just a minute, okay?
Okay-do. Gotcha.
Hymie's Haberdashery presents the Hymie's Oath.
On my honor, I will dress my best, be clean in my speech and actions, live my life honestly, take care of my body for good build and fit, to help keep my country strong by supporting local merchants. Through the words and actions of my haberdasher, I will trust.
So, gentlemen, will you take the Hymie's Oath? Hymie's Haberdashery, 400 St. Peter Street, downtown St. Paul, at Hymie's.com.
Hi, this is Jim Parsons. This week on Shake Rattle Showtime, we have lots of great music from the early days of rock and roll.
Playing songs with words you can understand.
Shake Rattle Showtime.
So join us.
Shake Rattle Showtime this Saturday afternoon at 4 on Club 1220 KLBB.
Hi, this is Shirley from Maplewood, Minnesota, and you are listening to KLBB Radio, the greatest station in the Twin Cities.
Call 651-275-1220. The Wolf Brewing Company, all request and dedication show with Stan Turner, is on Club 1220 KLBB.
Bobby, sign up Shirley there and put her on the payroll.
Yeah.
I love the way she talks. Isn't that nice? So
love
many
it.
Of you out there expressed that sentiment. Thank you so much. Stan Turner with you here. Bobby J. over there. It's 139 right now. And what do we have in the temperature department, Bobby? I've
59. Lost
59, heading for about 62. Mm-hmm. Boy, a good shake for us here in the Midwest on November the 3rd. I'll tell you that. Wow.
What's the temperature where you are, Tommy?
Today it's about 76.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Not bad. Send it our way if you would. Tommy Rowe, our guest right now. Tommy, of course, one of the most important of the pop music artists, starting back in the 60s and 70s, 80s, still going. Tommy Rowe is a guy who knew how to save his money and invest wisely, and he could take a retirement when he wanted to. Not a lot of pop musicians and composers can say that, but you've been very, very, very wise in the way you've handled your career, Tommy. Tommy, when you're out performing, especially when you were on the tours and the rest, I gotta believe that a lot of times people would yell up on the bandstand, "Hey, Tommy, would you sing 'I Wonder What She's Doing Tonight'?" Or, "Tommy, I think we're alone now. Would you please sing that for us?" There were so many Tommies out there. I suppose there was confusion.
Yeah, Tommy James and the Shondells, and they would always ask me, "Are you Tommy Rill and the Shondells?" Right? Well, that's the other Tommy. And then when I covered some of Tommy James' songs, they really got confused. That really confused me.
And then there was another Tommy out there, Tommy Boyce, with Bobby Hart.
So. Tommy Boyce, the Boyce at Heart. Yeah.
So the woods were full of Tommies. Tommy Rowe. Tommy, we're talking about your life story here, and we'll mention the book again in a minute, but coming from Atlanta and born in 1942, when you got touring as a performer, that was the old South in a way. I mean, it was segregated South, and you were on these tours, and oftentimes you were on the bus with black performers, and you have some anecdotes in your book about what it was like. These black performers, oftentimes, they south of the Mason-Dixon line, they couldn't get off the bus to go get something to eat, right?
Right. Well, my first tour in 1962, after Sheila was a hit, was with Sam Cooke. And it was an all-black troupe. It had Smokey Robinson and the Miracles were on the tour, Jerry Butler and the Impressions, and there were some other acts on the tour. And Chris Montez and I were on, that's how I met Chris Montez, was on that tour. And I found out after they booked me on the tour, you know, I was, when they told me I was touring with Sam Cooke, for one thing, I was ecstatic because of a huge fan of Sam Cooke as a songwriter, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but when, once I started the tour, then I found out the reason there was just, you know, they always had one white guy on the tour because it was the segregated South, and they couldn't stop and eat in all the restaurants, and they couldn't stay in the hotels where I stayed or the motels where I stayed. So the white guy was kind of the runner. You know, they call me the token au fait. And they called Chris Mr. In Between.
he was Hispanic, of course, or is Hispanic. Yeah,
But I was the runner to go get the food. In other words, they'd park the bus down the street from a mom and pop. And you have to remember, back in '62, they didn't have McDonald's or Burger King or you know, any of the fast food restaurants that we have today. So you'd go to a little mom and pop restaurant on the highway somewhere, and you'd run. I'd run in and order 40 hamburgers, you know, and they'd look at me like I was nuts. And several times I had to come up with some excuses why I was ordering so many hamburgers. And then I would take the hamburgers and walk down the street to the bus, and that's how all the black guys would eat. Wow. You know, that's how they were fed. And sometimes I would take Chris with me on these little trips, and Chris had a tart because he was kind of a brown guy. He wasn't black, but he was brown, so he had a hard time as well, you know, with me. So I started leaving him on the bus. It got complicated.
Wow. Well, you did it. I know. Buddy Holly did the same thing, too, when he was on tours. He'd be the gopher. He'd be the runner, too, to bring the food back to the black performers on the bus. Yeah, amazing stories.
A few of the early artists, Dion did it. There were some that did it. Some of them wouldn't do it because they knew what it was all about. I didn't have a clue. That was, of course, I had the number one record in the country, so they were happy to have me on the tour.
Yeah.
It was a song, you know.
Right.
But that was really not the reason. I mean, they didn't need me on the tour, but they just had to have, you know, the presence of a white guy. I mean, you know, you have to remember in the early 60s, that was when Martin Luther King was doing his thing, and it was real segregated. And even in some parts of the North, it was segregated. Yep. The military was segregated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, driving through Mississippi and Alabama, I remember one time in Mississippi, we got pulled over by the highway patrol one night. We were driving to a next gig. And they kept us there for hours. The guy was trying to figure out why a white guy was on a bus full of black people, you know. And they kept us there for hours. Finally, I made some phone calls, and I got the guy to believe that I was Tommy Rowe, the singer, and I was actually touring with the group, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was a very interesting period of history. And I'd tell you, it was such an experience for me. The learning experience was incredible. I was only 21 years old. Yeah. And to work with Sam Cooke, I mean, he was such a pro. You just learned so much from watching him on stage, how to communicate with an audience. Mm-hmm. And so those early experiences with the black entertainers were very rewarding for my career.
Tommy, I've often thought that pop music maybe was the first integrator of our society, because you performers, black, white, brown, you all got along fine. You appreciated each other's talents and music. And the color barriers, were not there. It's just amazing.
No, it didn't matter to me. I mean, when I was in high school, you couldn't hear rhythm and blues music or black music in the daytime. You could only hear, like, you know, the white artist, you know, Kate Smith and Perry Como, people like this. But late at night in Atlanta, about 10 o'clock at night, there was a station in Atlanta, WAOK, with Zena Sears. And they would play all rhythm and blues, Bobby Blue Bland, Jimmy Reed, you know, Muddy Waters, all this stuff, you know, James Brown.
Yep.
And so I would turn on the little radio late at night and lie in bed and listen to this music till about midnight. And Mother would wonder in the morning why I couldn't get up and go to school. You know?
Well, Dewey Phillips was doing the same thing in Memphis. He was playing so-called race music, a white disc jockey. Tommy Rowe, tell us about the Dick Clark Caravan tours with Dick Clark. We all know who Dick Clark was. He laid down some pretty strong rules, didn't he?
He did. Well, Dick was the reason I moved to California. When I got out of the service, I moved to New York City, and I was working out of New York. And Dick called my manager one day and said he would like to he would like to use me on one of his shows he was producing. Yet it wasn't on the air yet, but he'd like to use me as a regular on the show. And I'd probably, if I'd come out to Los Angeles, I'd be out there for about 6 months to do all the taping, and I could go back to New York. Well, I went out to do the show. It's called Where the Action Is, and a lot of you probably remember that show. It was a afternoon before Bandstand, a kind of, you know, entry to Bandstand. And so I went out and did all the tapings of the show, and I never went back to New York. I just ended up staying in Los Angeles. It was a pretty easy decision to make with the weather.
Sure.
But, well, you've been out there. I was in Los Angeles. And Dick used to tell us when we did the caravan, he would just emphasize, the show cannot go over an hour and a half. 90 minutes, that's it. Any show over an hour, I don't care who you are. If you're Elvis Presley, if you're on the stage over an hour and a half, that's too long.
Wow.
And boy, we had to really jam our songs in, you know, real quick. And sometimes we'd go over time, and boy, he'd just raise hell with us.
Mild-mannered Dick Clark. He could raise hell, couldn't he, when he had to?
Yeah. He was a great guy and a great supporter of all the young entertainers in those days.
We want to hear a couple more of your songs. Tell us a little, just a kind of a setup on Hooray for Hazel. Tommy Rowe, where did that one come from?
Well, I used to love Hazel, the TV show. I'm sure you all remember that, you know, and I was watching it one evening, and I said, well, you know, I write songs with girls' names. Why not do Hazel? You know? So I thought about it, and I came up with Hooray for Hazel, and it turned out to be a huge record for me.
Here it is. Here it is.
Hooray for Hazel, she put me down. Hooray for Hazel, she made me her clown. Hazel's been in love with many a guy. She tells them that she loves them and then says goodbye. Hooray for Hazel, I'm now on her list. I'm just another fool that couldn't resist. Hooray for Hazel, she puts me down. Hooray for Hazel, she made me her clown.
By the end of that song story, Hazel gets hers, doesn't she, Tommy Rowe, huh?
Yeah, she does. I don't know where you got that record, but I don't think that's me singing.
Really?
That sounds like somebody else.
I don't know. Lee Mallory was with you on your recording. Maybe we got the wrong one up here. I don't know. It's the right song, though, but we got the maybe.
It's the right song, and that's fine. You know, I'm the songwriter.
Yeah. Well, sorry about that one, Tommy. There's so many covers out there. That was inadvertent on our part. The one that you did record, you did what, backing vocals with Lee Mallory? Is that right?
Lee Mallory and Kurt Betcher, they had a group called the Millennium, and they were a big vocal group. They kind of sounded like the Beach Boys, but even more, harmonic.
Okay.
And Kurt had a lot to do with my recording of my album, It's Now Winter's Day, and the album Fantasy, which was kind of off my path of the bubblegum sound.
Sure.
We got back to the bubblegum sound with Dizzy in 1969.
Right. Well, wow. Well, sorry about that. That was inadvertent, but that's the right song, and you wrote it for sure. Number 6 on the charts for Tommy Rowe in 1966. Tommy, if you can stay with us just for a couple more minutes, we're going to take one final break here and back in a minute.
Okie doke.
She tells them that she loves them and this is goodbye. Hooray for Hazel, I'm now on her list. I'm just another fool that couldn't resist.
This is Tom from TimelyExpressions.com in Badness Heights. I'd like to talk to business owners. You know you have a great team of people working for you, making your company shine. How about showing how much you appreciate them when you hear they are growing their family with a customized embroidered blanket for the new baby? The gift will last a lifetime and they will know how much you care. Call me at 612-414-3674 or contact me at timelyexpressions.com.
Hey, it's Bobby J here, and I want to remind everyone the Temptations are coming to the Mystic Showroom. They're coming Saturday, December 31st. It's a New Year's Eve performance. It starts at 3 p.m. Tickets are only $39 and $49. They are available at the Mystic box office or online at mysticlake.com.
Did you know Wolf Beer has a brewing history that stretches back to the 1860s? Did you also know that Wolf Brewing Company has a baseball heritage as well? Yep, it's true. In fact, in the early 1900s, the Wolf Brewing Company fielded a team that would regularly beat teams from the Minneapolis and St. Paul area. And while fans were watching great baseball, they would ask for Wolfs. So when you're listening to great baseball, do the same. Ask for Wolfs, Stillwater's original craft beer. Wolf Brewing Company, Stillwater, Minnesota.
Did you know why Harrington was beaten 18 days from conception?
Hello, my name is Marianne Koharski. I'm the director of Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people. Our ads have proven to be life-saving. Our 800 hotline featured on every ad connects callers with the services they need for an untimely pregnancy, adoption information, or post-abortion assistance. So often, our ads may be the only sign of help to someone on the brink of an abortion decision. A young man recently called our hotline. His girlfriend was pregnant. Thankfully, we were able to connect them with the confidential counseling and the help they needed. Please help us continue this life-saving outreach. Send whatever you can to Pro-Life Across America. Check us out on the web at prolifeacrossamerica.org. Pro-Life Across America is totally educational, non-political, and tax-deductible.
Stan is playing your song. Thanks for listening to the Wolf Brewing Company All Request and Dedication Show on Club 1220 KLBB.
If that's Tommy Rowe singing his song there. Tommy, is that you or not?
Yeah, you know what I think? I think you're playing the re-recordings I did of the songs. And I talk about that in my book.
Yeah, you do.
That's something that I wish I had never done, but they're out there, and there's a lot of them on the internet. I tell my fans, if you want the original recordings, it has to be on MCA Records.
Yep.
But,
okay.
I mean, those are fine. I mean, they're good. It's just you can never, you know, redo a hit record. It just doesn't sound the same, you know.
That's true.
And I was at a stage in my career where I needed a little cash. You know, I was going through a divorce, and I did those re-recordings, and it's something that I wish I could take back. But I, you know, like I say, the genie's out of the bag.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for what it's worth, Tommy, you still sound great in re-recordings. But I too recognize the one right away. It's not the hit version that you put out there, but it definitely is you. Dizzy again. You wrote it. I think you did this in collaboration with Freddie Weller, writing it. And what, 11 key changes? Is that right in that song?
Yeah, that's right. I remember when Dizzy came to me in a dream one night. I used to keep a tape recorder next to the bed because there's several songs I wrote that came in a dream. And Dizzy was one of those songs. And I got up and hummed the thing, da, 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 like that. And I got up the next day and started working on it, and I couldn't finish it. And Freddie had moved out to Los Angeles. He was the guitar player with Paul Revere and the Raiders, so we were touring together. And I said, Freddie, I've got this idea. I dreamed this song one night, but I can't seem to finish it. And I said, you know, we've got to put a modulation in there somewhere because I try to have a modulation in all my songs.
Yep.
And he said, well, sis, why don't we put the modulation in the first two bars? And I said, what? You can't do that. He said, well, listen, he started playing it. And I said, man, that's fantastic. What a great idea. So, you know, Freddie was really the guy that helped me finish that song. I just couldn't get it off the ground, and he came up with that modulation, and that's where you get all the key changes. There's 11 different key changes.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I remember when I used to rehearse this with bands, different bands on the road. You know, I pick up bands and do shows like that. And they thought, oh, yeah, Tommy Rowe songs, they're simple. We can do it. There's no problem. It comes to Dizzy, and they just get this look on their face like a deer in the headlights. You know? What do we do with this song?
Yeah. Well, Dizzy, I'll tell you what you did with it. You took it to the top of the charts. It's your second number one song, Dizzy, from 1969. Tommy, what a great piece of work that is. Wow. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
And you know what? We're just getting so low on time here. Let's try to squeeze at least a part of another of your big hits, Jam Up Jelly Tight. Tell us a little bit about that before we hear it.
That was a saying my father used to use when I was a kid growing up. We use groovy or out of sight. My dad would see a pretty girl walking down the street and say, son, that young lady is jam up and jetty tight.
Let's put it to music right here. That's a cute song. Now, we Northerners, we Yankees, have a new expression we can use, thanks to you, Tommy, huh?
Yeah.
Jam up and jelly tight.
That's the original. Just remember, my book is at TommyRowe.com, and you can get it at Amazon as well, but autographed copies are TommyRowe.com.
Yes, and the name of the book, From Cabbage Town to Tinsel Town and Places in Between. You know, Tommy Rowe, R-O-E. No, not fish eggs, not caviar, but Rowe. And just a couple things about the Southern the language. You know, up here for a collective you, we say, some people say use, Y-O-U apostrophe Z. Down there, it's y'all, of course. And you get into some Southernisms down there. I guess you said if you were raised properly in the South, you'd always say thanky if someone lent a helping hand. Thanky. And then if you went to the fishing hole to go swimming, you'd first get naked. Is that right?
You'd get naked.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Naked.
I'm sorry.
Before you jump in the swimming hole, and if you eat chili the night before, you might want to go sit in that same swimming hole the next morning.
Oh, my. And then you might be up the creek, right? The creek?
Up the creek. And you'd never ask for a Coca-Cola. You'd say, give me a Coca-Cola.
My golly, boy, that's a foreign language down there. You hear? Tommy, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to ask you, have you ever done the so-called something like Happy Together Tour? They come through here at the State Fair, and we love to see the groups from back then.
Yeah, they were asking me about doing it this year, but one reason I retired was I just didn't want to do any more package shows. You know, 55 years of or 25 years of shows is enough.
Sure.
And what I'm doing now is I'm doing an evening with Tommy Rowe where I do a Q&A in the show and I talk about B-sides, kind of what we're doing in this interview. You know, I can delve a little bit more into the songwriting.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit more satisfying for me at this stage in my career. And, of course, I'm promoting the book with it as well.
Well, that's wonderful. Tommy, it's worth promoting. And I hope you'll bring your show to this area. Please do, won't you? Mm-hmm. You have a lot of adoring fans up here. And you'll fill the venue.
Well, I love Minnesota. Minnesota's always been good to me, so I love coming up there. One of these days, I'm going to come ice fishing. I've been invited so many times, and I start thinking about it. Yeah. I start thinking about sitting in that little hut in the cold weather, and I back out. But I'm going to do it.
You better bring some southern comfort, boy.
Hey, that's it. A lot of bourbon.
That's it. Tommy Rowe, what a great treat talking with you. Thank you for all you've done for us, making us so happy over the years with your music. Keep on coming, will you?
Thank you, Stan. It's my pleasure.
All right, Tommy Rowe. Thank you so much. Well,
remember,
Bobby, huh?
You can get his book at TommyRowe.com. If you want an autographed copy, that's the place to get it. Tommy Rowe.
And folks, please join us tomorrow, the All Request Show, right after the news at noon. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Bye-bye. So come on.